From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 25th day of April, 2012. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley at ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. And a bit later in the program, the folks at the Andersons Climbers Facility in Lafayette, Indiana, will be along to look at the cash grain market. Dave Dickey, your Director of Agricultural Programming, will be here with today's edition of the Agricultural News. And we'll hear from Emerson Nafziger about planting soybeans so early in the season and whether it's a good or a bad thing. I'll give you a clue. It's not too terribly bad. Hey, and it all happens right here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Leonard Seed Service supports agricultural programs as an additional service to its customers. Leonard Seed Service is an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products to farmers throughout East Central Illinois via the Asgrow on-demand bulk soybean handling system. Leonard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Of course, it's a Wednesday afternoon. We'll call it Paul Cooley Day here on AM 580 and Illinois Public Media, WILLAG.org. In the corn pit, futures were a bit lower on the day, down 7 1/4 at $6.11. July at $6.01, 7 cents lower. In September at $5.49, down 6 1/2. December corn futures, $5.38, down 3 1/2 cents. In March at $5.49 1/2, down 3 1/2. The May at $5.58, down 3 1/4 in the corn pit. May futures from the wheat, $6.16 1/2, down 8. July at $6.26 1/2 in Chicago, down 6. And from the soybeans in Chicago, $14.73 1/2. Things turned to green, 12 1/4 cents higher there. July at $14.76, up 11. August soybeans, $14.58 1/2, up 8. In September, $14.11 up 12 1/4. November, $13.70 1/2, up 18 1/2. January, at $13.68 1/4, up 17 1/4 for the day. May bean meal futures at $413.90, up $1.80. May bean oil at $55.65, up 36. Live cattle futures from the CME Group, June contract, $112.27 1/2, up 70. August at $116.40 higher. May feeders at $148.60, up 75. And August contract at $152.17 1/2, up 95 cents. June lean hogs, $87.57 1/2, up $1.02 1/2. And July futures, $88.47 1/2, up 55 for the day. Of course, you're listening to Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign. This is the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures on the afternoon are trading at $104.12 a barrel, up 57 cents. Ethanol for the day at $2.15 3/10. That's a penny and 3/10 lower. Natural gas at $2.08 1/2, up 11 cents on the day. And the heating oil at $3.15 8/10 cents, up 2 8/10 cents. Gold futures at $1,641.40 an ounce, down $1.60. And the dollar at 79.04. down 0.13 on the day. The CRB index at 302.08. That's up 0.79. Here's what the weather forecast is calling for in the Urbana-Champaign area yet this afternoon. 50% chance of showers, a few thunderstorms, mostly cloudy, a high near 79 degrees with a southwest wind at 18 miles an hour, gusting to 29, or rather 4 this afternoon. Tonight, showers, thunderstorms likely, mainly before 1 a.m., mostly cloudy, a low of 55 degrees this evening. And we'll have a wind that will gust to 16 miles an hour. Chance of precipitation this afternoon and this evening turns to 60%. Then tomorrow, partly sunny skies, a high near 66. A north-northeast wind at 10 to 14, gusting to 18. Thursday night, cloudy and 43. Friday, a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms, cloudy near 55 degrees. Friday night, showers and possibly a thunderstorm, cloudy, a low of 44. Saturday, showers are likely, cloudy, a high of 54. 50%, or rather 60% chance of precipitation on Saturday. And on Sunday, mostly sunny skies, a high near 58 degrees. Sunday night, partly cloudy at a low of 39, and Monday, mostly sunny skies, a high of 59. We'll take a more complete look at the agricultural weather forecast when we get closer to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Wednesday afternoon. Paul Cooley at ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, joining us. Good afternoon to you, Paul. Thanks so much for being with us, Mr. Cooley. Can you take us through what you saw in the marketplace for the day? Well, what do you know? Paul doesn't seem to be with us this afternoon, but we'll get it back to him here in just a moment. There he is. Hi, Paul. How are
you? Hi, Todd. On this beautiful, sunny afternoon in the Midwest with rain on the horizon and farmers are working overtime planting, finishing up corn and planting some soybeans, I think.
Yeah, they're planting soybeans. That's all new at this time of the year, and we'll hear a bit later in the program, I know, because I did the interview with Emerson just a bit earlier than today, and he wrote an article on it for the Bulletin that said, hey, put the planters in the ground and go, and it'll probably be just fine for soybeans.
Well, early this morning, the private weather guy that I had the most confidence in, I read his weather forecast, and hey, he said it's a warmer forecast for the wheat country, soft red winter wheat. And I knew in a moment that I had to make about 10 phone calls quickly, and that was about the warmer weather forecast. Possibly it's still going to get cold in some parts of Ohio, but it means that we're going to have some warmer temperatures, and we also see some rainfall. And, of course, production agriculture, meaning planting a big crop, I think, and harvesting a big crop was enough in the corn and wheat market to cause it to sell off. Even with a stronger corn basis and even with old crop and new crop corn sales to China, it did create a sell-off in the corn and wheat market.
You know, tell me about those sales, because there were something like 50 million of them, and some of them were actually earmarked for China. Do you think they're all headed that way?
Well, and you know, the rumor is that when we do think that September corn in form of basically comes out with somewhere in that 500 to a billion bushel of corn harvested, somewhere in there. And, of course, the exact shipments is still an unknown. But it does take the pressure off of the old crop corn. But my feeling is that the commodity funds are loaded up with a lot of old crop futures. I think, you know, I can just tell in the voice from some of the customers on the other end of the line, they're not very happy about this cheap old crop futures and a 40 to 45 over basis at some of these corn processors in the Midwest. So there does seem to be a feeling that maybe when the delivery process starts, the May futures will get closer to May cash at some of the processing plants in the Midwest and export markets.
That
will
push it to what? Closer to 650, I suppose.
You bet. So there's a feeling that the futures don't represent what the cash price is, and that's the real dilemma. The other factor is we really don't know when new crop corn is going to be harvested. It's planted early, and at the same time, we do anticipate a lot of wheat being harvested early. And without a major frost or freeze condition, that is on track.
Now, on the old crop price, are you concerned at all that we have already topped it out and that from this point forward, as long as new crop remains large and in under good conditions, that it will continue to fold just a bit? Over the long time.
I think that that's a good observation, and I won't criticize you a bit, Todd. I know you thought I was going to tear you apart.
No, I didn't.
I think that's probably a good question and a good comment, and I agree with you.
I didn't want to make the comment. I wanted to know what you thought about
it. I think that that's a very true statement, and that is driving the marketplace incredibly nuts at this time. So the answer is it could be very well in. The big problem to the think tank people is that they think that corn should have a value above $6, and I think that's what we have to brace ourselves for.
Right. Are they right?
Well, I think we really don't see the end users playing the delivery process as much as I thought they would, you know, 5 years ago or 10 years ago. I think that this kind of a basis level with this export demand and ethanol usage and industrial usage, I think that we could see some interesting delivery situations take place in the corn market. And I think the May corn contract will be quite volatile during the great month of May.
Now, we've switched from corn planting to soybean planting. Do you think that that means more soybeans will be put in the ground than USDA had expected when they released their numbers March 30th?
Yes, I don't think there's a doubt about it. And it comes from two areas. The planting intentions report was a little bit light on 2 million acres of wheat plantings, and also light on 2 million acres of row crop. And it's our general impression that this higher soybean price level is definitely encouraging extra production. And we saw that in the Canadian statistics with canola. And, you know, the whisper, you know, even on Commodity Week, all your analysts there were talking about the corn, the bean button being pushed, and also we're hearing about it as well. I think the area that we see it in most parts in Illinois, the areas that didn't pre-plant nitrogen, and that's the south half of Illinois, and I'm going to say to some extent Indiana and probably in Missouri. So the south and up also in the spring wheat area of the Dakotas, I think that's also a big area of more beans.
Anything else you want to add?
Because well, it's been a profitable lifetime, and special thanks to you and Dave and all the happy times. And, you know, I have to say thank you and have a profitable day.
Well, thank you so much, and we get to talk to you one more time, so I'm not going to really say goodbye today, but this is your last Wednesday with us. Thanks so much for 27 years of service, Paul. We do appreciate it.
Have a good one.
You too. Bye-bye now. That's Paul Cooley. He's with ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, has been a volunteer with willag.org for 27 years. I don't know that it's a record, but it's pretty darn close. We do appreciate all the kind of work that Paul has done with us over that time, and we'll have him on Commodity Week along with Wayne Nelson and Dan Zwicker this weekend, so we'll maybe reminisce just a bit with Paul about all those good times over the last 27 years that we've had together. Again, you're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Wednesday afternoon.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
Well, Dave Dickey is here now. He'll take us through all the agricultural news for the day.
In agricultural news, two major South Korean retailers suspended sales of U.S. beef following the discovery of a case of mad cow disease in a U.S. dairy cow yesterday. Reaction elsewhere in Asia was muted, with Japan saying there's no reason to restrict imports. South Korea is the world's fourth largest importer of U.S. beef, buying 107,000 tons of the meat worth $563 million in 2011. Korea's government said it will continue to import U.S. beef, but increase inspection at all ports of entry. The new case of mad cow disease is the first in the U.S. since 2006. It was discovered in a dairy cow in California. The infected cow, the fourth ever discovered in the U.S., was found as part of an Agriculture Department surveillance program that tests about 40,000 cows a year. No meat from the cow was bound for the U.S. food supply. The California cow is what scientists call an atypical case of BSE, meaning that it did not get the disease from eating infected cattle feed. Senate Agriculture Committee Chairwoman Debbie Stabenow announced late yesterday that she had suspended today's scheduled markup of the farm bill. Southern farm organizations had pushed for the delay, unhappy with the details released last week in the draft version of the bill. Southern Commodity Groups wrote Stabenow, saying in their letter that they had little time to fully examine the full 900-page bill, yet they had examined the bill long enough to know they did not like the commodity title. The letter said in part, quote, "The mark raises serious equity issues and grave concerns over planting distortions. The bill was scored to save more than $26 billion by the Congressional Budget Office, but it would eliminate direct payments, countercyclical payments, and the average crop revenue election program." Burger King announced today that all of its eggs and pork will come from cage-free chickens and pigs by 2017. Burger King uses hundreds of millions of eggs and tens of millions of pounds of pork annually. Already 9% of the company's eggs and 20% of its pork are cage-free. Earlier this year, McDonald's and Wendy's announced that they have asked their pork suppliers to outline plans for elimination of gestation crates without setting a timetable. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm UL via Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and of Commodity Week. You can always find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. On your smartphone at m.willag.org. Or simply by dialing this number, 217-333-3434. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a Wednesday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. In studio with us, Emerson Nafziger, Extension Agronomist at Illinois, to talk about planting soybeans. Emerson, the producers in the state of Illinois, Indiana, even in parts of the other parts of the Midwest have moved very quickly, but certainly in Illinois, planting corn, many are done. And they're thinking about planting soybeans. Have you looked at the possibilities of putting soybeans in the ground in the mid part of April?
Well, we have. This year, I think our soybean planting progress looks a little like last year corn did, with some done by the end of April, but not very much. This year, we're clearly going to have a lot of corn done, and the soybeans come next. We did have an unusually early start to soybeans. We listed 1%, as I'm recalling, either the 1st of April or the 8th of April, and that's very unusual to have a start like that to get percentages, in other words, before the middle of April. But this year is an unusual year, and we've had the luxury of pretty much deciding when we want to plant. Ironically, one of the things that's holding some people up from planting soybeans is dry soil. And that is going to be an issue, I think, until we get sort of general rainfall throughout the area. Yeah, but our planting date studies the last couple of years have shown us something different than we had believed before. I want to be quick to say that we haven't turned some kind of corner and now soybeans need to be planted earlier than they did 5 years ago or 10 years ago. But I think we saw with really pretty good yield conditions the last couple of years, that the earlier we planted soybeans, the better the yields were. And our planting date studies started around the middle of April and went into early June. So we have covered that, the normal planting period, pretty well. Before these last 2 years, we sort of said, well, if you get them planted by the middle of May, that's usually okay. We don't suffer very much yield loss. And we had data to back that up. So I'm not quite sure all the reasons why the last 2 years have been different. But I think they do tell us that there's not much reason to wait to plant soybeans until some magic date in May. And I remember a farmer telling me one time, well, I don't plant before, I think it was the 20th of May, just routinely because it's too early if we plant before that. A little bit like we might have said with corn maybe 30 years ago, you can't plant it before the 1st of May because we can't control weeds or the seeds won't come up. We've made improvements with soybean seed, certainly soybean seed treatments, and with our herbicide programs and getting soybeans into the ground well, that I don't think those are issues anymore. So our data from these last 2 years, we have 7 site years of data that really lined up remarkably well. And now we have to make sure we point this out. There's not a big yield loss from, say, April 20 to May the 5th or May the 1st or May the 10th. So we're not looking at bushels of yield loss, but a little bit. The surprising thing was that yields in mid-April were just a little higher than they were in early May. And then the acceleration of yield loss continues through May. And this is what we normally see, that the line that describes the planning date response curves downward and accelerates as we get later and later. That's very typical for any crop that we plant, that it's not a straight line usually, and it doesn't go over and then drop off a cliff. It's just sort of a gradual decline. And our acceleration during May goes from about 2 to 3 tenths of a bushel per acre per day of delay in early May to about almost half a bushel by the end of May. Actually, the late planting penalty from this most recent data isn't quite as great as we had seen before either. In other words, that line sinks relatively slowly, but by the 10th of June or so, we're, according to these data, we've dropped about 18 or 19 bushels from, say, the mid-April planting. And certainly we don't want to do that if we can help it.
All right. Thank you so much, Emerson.
That'll do.
Emerson Nafziger, Extension Agronomist at the University of Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Wednesday afternoon, and Patrick Kaufman is on the phone line with us now to talk about the cash grain market. He's at the Anderson's Climbers facility there in Delphi, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Patrick. Talk to me just a bit about basis in your area, please.
Corn basis, we're seeing corn processors from anywhere from 35 to 40 over the July. We have moved the complex from the May to the July in most processors. Bean basis, you know, it's kind of funny. We've had an 80-cent move from last Thursday's open in the bean complex. So I think the bean processors are anticipating, or we're anticipating a weaker bean basis to come. We have seen some bean movement here as of late, but bean basis in the area is running 5 to 10 over the July.
And why do you think they would make that anticipation, given the numbers that keep getting smaller out of South America? Is it simply that more beans are being planted in the area?
No, the movement. As beans move, because we've had an 80-cent jump, now we're closer to $15. Before we wanted 14, now we're a dollar higher. Basis has improved a little bit. We think bean basis will ratchet back here shortly.
Okay, and your bids are?
Cash bids into Delphi, 624, into Climbers, which the processing corn, 635. Delphi beans are 1458.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Tom.
And that is Patrick Kaufman. He's at the Anderson's Climbers facility in Delphi, Indiana. Back in just a couple of minutes with the agricultural weather forecast.
It's National Zucchini Bread Day. The first records of zucchini in the U.S. date back to the early 1920s. It was almost certainly brought over by Italian immigrants and probably first emerged in the U.S. in California. It's also St. Mark's Day, patron of cattle breeders. On this day in agricultural history in 1744, Anders Celsius died. Celsius was a Swedish astronomer, physicist, and mathematician who is famous for the temperature scale he developed. Celsius's fixed scale for measuring temperature defines 0 degrees as the temperature at which water freezes, and 100 degrees as the temperature at which water boils. The scale, an invented form of Celsius's original design, was adopted as a standard and is still used in almost all scientific work. And in 1959, the St. Lawrence Seaway opened. It connects the Great Lakes with the Atlantic Ocean. Its completion opened the heart of America's industrial and agricultural areas to ocean-going vessels for shipping. The Seaway begins in Montreal to Lake Erie and ultimately to the Atlantic. The waterway was completed over a period of 5 years at a cost of $1 billion. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's Paul Cooley Day, a Wednesday afternoon. Paul, of course, an analyst here at WILL for 27 years, volunteering his time. Our thanks to Paul. Speaking of volunteers, another volunteer on the phone line with us is Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, and he's going to bring us a little bit about the agricultural weather forecast. Tell me about the forecast here in the Midwest as we go into, I can't believe this, but bean planting season as opposed to corn planting season.
It's amazing. This has been a very interesting season, most definitely, and I'm sure it'll get more so as time moves on. That's the way it is these days. But for the near term, we're actually looking at stability. The model data that we look at every day has been bouncing off the walls this week. Of course, we had the big scare for the freeze, and then there was no freeze. And, well, anyway, the bottom line is that we're looking at stability here today, and I think the forecast is going to still bring a cooler shot of air across the Midwest as we get into the weekend and early next week, but it's nowhere near the cold air mass that was suggested a day or so ago. And we will see some frost across the Great Lakes region and a couple of freezes, but this will not be any different than what we've been seeing and certainly will not be a threat to corn or wheat across the area. Now, it will have a little bit of rain that precedes it and a little bit of rain that follows it, and you put that together with the overall temperature regime across the region, and I think we've got some fairly decent conditions to continue planting in. Obviously, the rain, when it comes, is going to interrupt field work, but I don't see any big soakings to take place across the region that is going to set us out of the fields for more than a day or two at a time. And so it's really going to be a very pleasant period of time for getting all kinds of things done. The first round of precipitation that comes across the region of significance, and we'll have a little disturbance that will come across some of the region here later today and into tonight. These are light showers that shouldn't have a big impact. A little bit more significant precipitation will come across some of the region as we go from Friday into Saturday. This will come right across the heart of the region from South Dakota, Nebraska, into Illinois and parts of Missouri and Indiana. We'll probably see anywhere from a couple tenths of an inch upwards to three quarters of an inch, maybe something a little bit greater in a couple spots, and it'll be gone. And then our next round of precipitation will occur as we get into, let's say, Tuesday and Wednesday of next week. So pretty good situation. Now, hard red winter wheat country looks very good, too. They've been hot the last couple of days with temperatures getting up into the 90s, but that is about over for now, and we will probably see our first 100-degree temperature in the Southwest Plains this afternoon.
Generally, I don't take you to South America at this time of the year, but they keep dropping the numbers for soybean yield there. Can you kind of give me a wide look at what happened during that growing season?
Boy, I'll tell you what, it was just a tough time. That's just all there is to it. A lot of dryness occurred in the southern parts of Brazil, and, of course, Argentina had their issues early in the season, but Brazil south really never recovered. Once they got dry, it started raining for a brief 2 or 3 week period, but it then dried back down again. And I think everyone was assuming when the rain started falling that that was it, the game was over. And in reality, it turned dry again, and we lost a little bit more. So I think that's really the culprit here. Hopefully the numbers that are coming in now are really the best numbers we're going to have, and we won't look for any more of this growing losses across that region. The next picture that we're going to want to look at is, and I'm sure you've discussed this with others, is how much of the corn in the U.S. we're going to switch over to soybean acres. That'll be kind of interesting to see.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Drew.
All right. Have a great afternoon.
Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joined us here on Paul Cooley Day for Illinois Public Media. Yeah. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.